Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Eli, my man, let's go.
Swing and a miss, and this ball game is over. The Mets snapped the Cubs' seven-game winning streak. They beat the Cubs by a score of 10-3.
Just processing the moment. Bases loaded, 2-0 count against a guy that can do that. Just don't just have to throw a fastball there. Otherwise, I thought he pitched well again. I was really pleased with that. He got better as the game was in progress. Shows great composure. Again, that was just a moment you got to step back and understand what's going on and maybe choose a different route. Otherwise, I thought he was outstanding.
Line on Alec Mills, 5 innings, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, and 1 home run. Cubs lose, but they had a great ride on this streak until then. Crazy night last night over at Wrigley Field. Our MLB insider, Bruce Levine, joins me now here on The Score to talk all things Cubs and maybe throw in a little other stuff, too. Hey, Bruce.
Lawrence, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How did things go today over at Wrigley Field for you? That was a quick turnaround.
Well, you know, we're used to it. I mean, that's just part of baseball. It's not like we play, Lawrence. We just talk about it, write about it, and show up. So we just get a little less sleep, and we showed up. And, you know, the American Legion week helped out quite a bit, considering that Joe didn't let the players report too late, and therefore, the reporters didn't have to show up until later on either. So an easy week for them. They came through it smoothly. The Alec Mills experience didn't work out too well today. But nonetheless, it was an outstanding homestand. They took care of their business. And they stand in pretty good position as they go out to this 11-game crucial road trip against very good teams for most of it. At least at the very beginning, they start with Atlanta, 3 in Philadelphia, in Milwaukee before they end up in Washington and come home on September the 10th.
Bruce, how do the players and coaches feel about American Legion Week? And can you kind of break it down for people who are like, wait, what are those guys talking about?
Well, that's, just showing up and playing the game. That's what Joe's interpretation of American Legion Week is. And that's what you do. You do all the other things that you do in your life, and then you show up for your American Legion game when you're a kid. That's what he does with his players this week, where they're not allowed to even come to the ballpark until 5 o'clock every day. If they have appointments with the coaches, or if they have to go for some type of physical rehab, or if they want to look at film or something like that, they can make an appointment, but in general, they're not allowed to show up until 5 o'clock every day. And that means that they're more well-rounded people. They've done something like gone to lunch with their family or done something fun with their wife or kids or just mellowed out or read a book. Something to just take your mind off of it and relax after 130 games of wear and tear of the Major League season, another 30 of spring training. This has worked terrific for Joe everywhere he's been since he started managing in 2006 with the Tampa Rays. And that is probably the reason why the Chicago Cubs have the best record of any team in baseball since he took over managing them, the most wins, and certainly the most wins in the second half than any team in baseball. So whatever magic comes out of this, you can't argue with it because it's worked.
Bruce, what was the most impressive part of the Cubs' seven-game streak?
Well, I just think the way that they gutted it out without a closer. The length of the starters started to pick up, which is what they've been waiting for all the time. That is a nice sidebar to it. But just the resilient group of bullpen guys and the way Joe has masterfully handled those, like the 88 keys on a piano, just picking out the right guys, getting certain guys rest, using somebody for a closer, taking him out if he sees he doesn't have his stuff like stroke the other night, taking him out 2 nights ago and saying, you know what, you just don't have it today. After two batters, one walk, and then out, he was out of there after a couple of balls. That is really managing and knowing what you're looking at. I think it's so impressive how those bullpen guys have responded to everything Joe asked them to do, and that's why they have the best record in the National League, because that bullpen has been resilient. It's been added on to by Epstein and Hoyer. Joe has found new strength in guys like Chavez. He put Strope at the end of the game, and he saved the 8-0 before he blew one on Friday. Just a masterful job of handling very good bullpen guys. I can't tell you enough how impressed I am with Joe handling the team this year, even more so than when he had a world championship team in 2016. This is just a guy taking what he has and getting the very most out of it.
I was joking earlier about all the different things that have happened to the Cubs this year and how they have been able to overcome them. And I feel like it's an organizational win, Bruce, that it's been the guys that are in the dugout, and it's been Joe, and it's been the guys upstairs finding the right pieces to add to this thing to keep it afloat.
Certainly has. I mean, a lot of front office people would say, hey, I got you these two guys at the beginning of the year, Chad Wood and Darvish. We got you a close down. We got you a shutdown closer. Morrow, and they got hurt. There's nothing we can do about it. Instead, Epstein and Hoyer roll up their sleeves. They continue to add to this roster, and they don't stop until they have enough pieces. And again, are they going to have a closer? Will it be enough to get them through these 30 games and then through the deep playoff run? We'll have to watch and see. He doesn't really have a lockdown closer out there. With Morrow down, he doesn't have a real strikeout guy that comes in and strikes everybody out. He has situation guys that he used perfectly, like Wilson and Edwards, and Edwards starting to come around again. I think Chavez has totally saved the bullpen from what he's been able to do. And C-Shirk has been the MVP of the team all year long. He's just gone out there and pitched every other day and pitched his ass off. I mean, it's just so impressive to watch. And people just basically ignore it because they expect him to go out there and do what he does. But he has saved this bullpen all year long. He was used him as a closer, setup man, sixth inning guy. Today he came in as a starter, a quasi-starter in the suspended game, got the win. Just so impressive the way they've handled it. And, it's not to diminish, what the position players have done and the guts of Rizzo and the ascension of Baez as a superstar player in the National League. But to me, the bullpen and now the starters are starting to pick it up. It's impressive, and we'll see if Joe goes to the whip and they start putting some length between them and the Cardinals and Milwaukee. I don't think anybody in their clubhouse is counting on that. They believe it's going to be a rough 30 days of trying to win this division. But they're a resilient bunch, and it should be fun to watch.
When is Chris Bryant going to be back?
I would say, without any setback here tomorrow, I'd say, by Thursday or Friday. That's probably most sense to join the team Friday in Philadelphia if he's gotten all his work in, because they have one day in Atlanta tomorrow. That doesn't make any sense.
So, right.
From the perspective of, maybe one more day down there, and then he joins them over the weekend with Philadelphia, that makes a lot of sense. All the reports are great. He's doing really well with his new batting, holding on to the bat with both hands through the swing. He played in the field the last 2 days. So I would say Friday or Saturday, Saturday is the time where it turns September 1st. And you can expand rosters. You don't have to manipulate anything. But as soon as Bryant's ready, he'll let him know, and he'll be there. But I would say Friday, Saturday at the latest.
Bruce, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure. Take care, bud, my man.
That's Bruce Levine. Check him out inside the clubhouse, covering the Cubs and the White Sox for us all day. I know the connection wasn't perfect, so take that quality 10 minutes and move on. So it was really cool to be in the house for the last 2 days. Zach got a chance to call the Cubs games because Pat had a couple of scheduled nights off. And it was perfect, like the way that it landed, because Zach grew up in Queens. Like, honestly, if you watch Coming to America, you can see him in the background in the McDowells. He grew up on that stuff, man. They have the Big Mac. We have the Big Mick. And the area where the McDowells grew up or lived is where Zach grew up. So him calling Mets games, like that was a big deal yesterday. What was really cool is that it gave me a chance to catch up with Wayne Randazzo, who's the Zach of the Mets. Like, he's been doing pre and post. He's been calling a couple games here and there. And I've always been a fan of the Dazzler. When he was here at the Score, we have become kind of the cradle of play-by-play guys around here. Judd Surratt, Zach, Jordan when he was here, Randazzo. Am I missing anybody? Guys that do play-by-play?
Benetti.
Oh, that's right. Benetti. Me. We got a good little list of guys that do play-by-play. So anyway, Dazzler and I were talking, and I wanted to bring you some of that. And I wanted to let you hear some of the things he had to say. This was the thing that, well, there are a couple things. First, I want you to hear what he said when I asked him about adjusting to his new role in New York.
My first year with the Mets, Howie actually gave me a critique and said, you know, it's your first year, you're not from here, you don't sound invested when the Mets do something good. You don't sound like you're, like, really into it. And I thought to myself, I am really into it. I want the Mets to do well. I wonder what that is. So I thought about it, and I talked to some people, and I got a voice coach at the end of that season. And because I felt like my highlights needed work, and it turns out I wasn't breathing properly. Even like when I did updates on the Score, there were times where I felt out of breath, or when I would do scoreboard updates on the Mets postgame, that I would just not be breathing properly. So I worked with this voice coach to learn how to breathe right, and it made my highlights way better. I've been told I have a good voice or whatever the case may be. I was not going to rest on letting that carry me. I wanted to be a better broadcaster through and through. If that meant better highlights, if that meant being a better storyteller and learning from guys like Howie and Gary Cohen on how to do that, I just wanted to be more complete. And, you know, I feel like I've made strides to get to that point.
That was the part that really kind of tripped me out, that he went and saw a voice coach. Wayne's got a great voice, but that doesn't mean he's necessarily using it correctly. I talk about this all the time, at least from the diaphragm. It's part of the reason that I stand when I do the show, so that I can reach all of my register with my voice. Now, he's talking about something that's a little bit more specific. And you usually see singers do this. One of my lifelong friends is a voice coach at Northwestern. Professor Foster. Shout out to Professor Foster. She teaches great young singers how to use their voice. So I followed up. I asked Wayne what he learned from the voice coach.
She told me that there are letters that allow you to breathe. The hard, the T's, C's, kind of what singers do, she said. And that if you hit those letters properly, you'll breathe automatically. You won't have to take a breath. You'll just breathe by yourself just from hitting those letters right. And it made all the difference in the world. I call football games on the radio. I could not get through a game without sounding hoarse at the end of it. Now I could do like 3 games in one day. It made such a huge difference in my voice quality. It was really remarkable.
That's crazy to me. again, a guy at the highest level, saying, you know, I'll do something that's kind of rudimentary. I'll work on my voice. It's an incredible lesson for broadcasters of all ages and experience levels that Wayne like humbled himself and said, here's a way that I can get better. Here's an easy way for me to look at something that I don't do well or change something that I don't like about my broadcast and make myself better. I asked him about humbling himself.
When I do games now on TV and people say nice things, you know, the first thing I do is I ask Gary, what'd you think? Because I know he watched, and I want to be able to get from him, the guy who's one of the best in the business at this, you know, some tips on how to get better. I try not to rest on any of that, and maybe I will one day, maybe when I'm feeling like I'm where I'm supposed to be or I've reached the top of what I want to do. But at this point, I don't want to put any ego into it. Even if I'm around people that are Mets fans or might know me, I still will. I'll introduce myself. I don't ever want to come off as, oh, you know who I am because I broadcast for the Mets. I never think that way.
I had that moment at Bears with Stacy. Like, I introduced myself to Stacy, and she was like, I know who you are. I was like, I never make that assumption. Look at Wayne being all humble and being good at his gig, just like Zach. So considering that he's a Chicago dude, he lives here in the offseason, he's now invested in the Mets. I was wondering what the reaction to Wayne was from Mets fans. Here's what he told me.
They've been really great. I thought at first they would be tough on me for being an outsider. Even when the job was open, I thought a New Yorker would get it. Why wouldn't a New Yorker get it? So they were very welcoming, and any feedback I've gotten has been mostly constructive for the most part. There have been very few people who are just like, you suck, get out of here. I feel like people have been really good to me about giving me some room to kind of work myself into the role. I think they've embraced a lot of the stuff that we've done on social media, which is nice. And I think they just want to be heard. And I think that I've, you know, at least opened myself up to hearing what they have to say. They're a big part of the New York Mets is that fan base and how passionate they are. You know, 2015, we went to L.A., we came to Wrigley, we went to Kansas City. None of those ballparks were as loud as Citi Field was during that postseason. So I think the Mets fans have a lot to say about the future success of the franchise, and they want to win badly, and I hope that they get a chance to soon.
Good for Wayne. It was really good catching up with him and getting his perspective and getting a good tip on broadcasting. It's very cool. I plan to share that with my class this quarter. It's a Major League Baseball guy humbling himself and saying, I should go get a voice coach with a voice like that. See? Can always be learning. Isn't that the great thing from Glengarry Glen Ross? A, always. B, B, C. Oh, wait. Learning doesn't start with a C.
Can always be caring about getting better?
Sure. That works. We'll do what we have to do to make it work. Anytime I can get in a Glengarry Glen Ross reference, I'm good with it. I haven't seen it in a while. I need to fire that back up. Is it on Netflix or something? Can I find it there? Don't they just, like, get rid of stuff? Like, isn't it probably been too long now? I met Bob Odenkirk while I was in the booth. That was nice.
Eli doesn't know who that is.
You don't know who Bob Odenkirk is? Wow.
I love how Herb just assumes, but he is right most of the time.
Did you ever watch Breaking Bad?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Do you
Mr.
know?
Mr. Show?
Yeah, like, do you know anything about comedy?
I guess not.
Okay. Wow, don't know who.
Shameful.
Don't know who Bob Oden, like, he's like from here, man.
Better Call Saul. I mean, seriously, Eli.
So great on See, Better Call
my
Saul.
My issue was growing up, I didn't have cable.
So this has happened. All this stuff happened in the last 10 years.
Last 6-7 years, I didn't have cable.
Get some cable, man. Seriously, this is the golden age of TV. And Breaking Bad is one of the best shows of all time. And Bob Odenkirk was great in that role.
Better Call Saul is pretty good, too. I would highly recommend it. honestly, if you wanted to watch Better Call Saul before you watch Breaking Bad, that would be fine.
I've watched a couple episodes of that. I like that show. I haven't watched a full season, though.
Breaking Bad?
No, Better Call Saul. I like that one better.
He's the star of it.
Right.
He's Saul.
Right.
So if we said Bob Odenkirk, like...
I don't know the name. Yeah.
He's Saul. And you know, like, the character... Well, you don't, because you're not watching it that closely, obviously.
I feel like I'm 15 right now.
Because...
He's probably slipping. He's like, who's Saul? I haven't met this Saul yet.
No one's called him.
I got Saul down.
But he's...
He's not Saul yet.
Right. He's Jimmy. He's Jimmy from Cicero.
Slipping Jimmy from Cicero.
Yeah. And so that plays on Odenkirk growing up here. And it's funny because he was joking about being a South Side guy and how... He said to Coombe when he was in the booth how his grandfather like switched. Like they were a White Sox family, and then he met Harry Carey or something, like something weird, and now they were Cubs people, and he's just been a Cubs guy. Like that's a guy. Like to me, that's a guy that can do the stretch. Like you can't be lower on the rung of celebrity than Bob Odenkirk to do the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley. You need to be that level of famous or higher to do the stretch, or else just play the recording of Harry.
Speaking of Harry Carey, I'm just connecting some dots here. You did the podcast with Barry earlier this week, and it was really cool. A couple weeks ago, we played a highlight from the 1984 season for the Cubs, and there was a 2-minute Harry Carey segment, and Barry just... Not broke down, but he's pretty emotional during it. And I feel like I've never seen that before out of him and a lot of Cubs fans from that era, too.
I love the people who are texting in, always be closing. Like, I didn't know that that was line. Wow. You should watch Claws, too, while I'm at it. Don't watch Claws. You'll just get confused.
I'm watching The Office right now on Netflix. So.
Wow. You're watching, catching up on The Office, are you?
Still doing that.
Who got you into watching The Office?
No, not really, Shane. Just my girlfriend and I just started watching it. She didn't watch a ton of it when she was younger. I didn't either.
Are you a cord cutter for real?
Yeah, DirecTV Now and The Office. It will Netflix.
Okay, but I mean... DirecTV doesn't quite say cord cutter. I understand that it means cable, but if you've got to DirecTV, I feel like you're kind of in there. Like,
yeah.
Do you still have like local channels and you can watch local stuff live?
Well, we have our digital antenna, so yeah. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm not a cord cutter.
Yeah, you're not a cord cutter, you weirdo. You're old school with your rabbit ears. Eli's waiting for that over-the-air signal. Turning the knob, trying to get to channel 44.
I used to have that when my grandpa's TV had it, and it was brought back some good memories.
All of our TVs had that. Messed up. All right, we need to take a break. I want to share the Lovie Smith stuff. You're like, hey, what are you talking about? Yeah, Lovie was on the show earlier, and there was some really cool stuff that he said about the Bears that he coached. I wanted to share that with you. We'll do that next here on The Score. Oh, no! Or as Lynn Castor would go, oh, no! The Brewers just scored 4 runs in the 7th, and they've tied things up with Cincinnati.
Cincinnati Reds.
That's right, Earl. 10-10. Hey, Herbie, do you think the Eli has heard the Earl Weaver? You have no idea. You just play that drop. You have no idea where it's
absolutely
come from.
Absolutely not. I told him where that drop was from, and he was, I don't think he knows who Earl is.
Is there a clean version of it in the vault?
Probably.
See if you can find it before the show, and we'll educate Eli on it. Because that's, it's a hoax, right? Like, it was like they were just messing around. But still, fantastic. But yes, the Reds and the Brewers are now tied at 10.
I just asked Eli who Earl Weaver is. He said former pitcher. I mean, that might be true. I don't know what he played, but when
that's not how people know him.
Exactly.
It's not how people know
him. So, no, he does not know who Earl Weaver is.
Because, I mean, that's the whole point of why where that soundbite comes from is so great. It's ridiculous. And you could never, ever get... So we have a clean version of it. Okay, so look, we should do this type of stuff from time to time. Eli, were you 25?
24.
Jeez. He doesn't know about the Earl Weaver manager show. Earl Weaver was a great manager, one of the best of all time. He was also a guy that was saucy with the language. And he and the guy who he used to do. So you know how, okay, let's put it in this way. You know how Joe Madden does the manager's show with Ron Coomer? And you know, Joe adds a little tu sabe at the end. Well, Earl Weaver had a manager's show too on the Baltimore Orioles radio network. And one day, he and the guy who hosts the show were kind of joking around. And they did like a mock show. At least I think that's the legend. The legend is that this didn't air. But just take a listen. This is where the Cincinnati Reds thing comes from.
Now, the manager's corner with the thoughts and opinions of the American League's winningest manager, the Orioles, Earl Weaver. And now to the manager's corner with Earl Weaver.
Well, Bill Whitehouse, Earl, from Frederick, Maryland, wants to know why you and the Orioles don't go out and get some more team speed.
Team speed, for Christ's sake. You get the fleas on the bases, getting picked off, trying to steal, getting thrown out, taking runs away from you. You get them big that can hit the ball out the ballpark, and you can't make any mistakes.
Well, certainly this show is going to go down in history, Earl. Terry Elliott of Washington, D.C., wants to know why you don't use Terry Crowley as a designated hitter all the time.
Well, Terry Crowley's lucky he's a baseball, for Christ's sake. He was released by the Cincinnati Reds. He was released by the Atlanta Braves. We saw that Terry Crowley could sit on his ass for eight innings and enjoy watching a baseball game just like any other fan, and has the ability to get up there and break one open in ninth. So if this mind his own business and let me manage the team, we'd be a lot better off.
Well, certainly you've made your opinions known on the fans' questions about baseball, Earl, but let's get to something else. Alice Sweet from Norfolk wants to know the best time to put in a tomato plant.
Alice Sweet ought to be worried about where next is coming from rather than where her next tomato plant's coming from. If she'd get her ass out of bars at night and go hustling around the street, she might get in her once in a while. I don't understand where these questions are coming from, Tom. That's about it from Manager's Corner. Go off and your show coming up next on the Baltimore Orioles Baseball Network.
How about the fact that he stuck the landing? How about that he gave you the out cue? Go bleep yourself on the Baltimore Orioles bleeping network. That never aired, right? That never aired. But I also, like, it's so old school baseball where you have that guy, like, being the straight man. Well, you've made your feelings pretty clear, Earl, about that. Earl Weaver saying what every... Joe Madden told you the exact same thing about you questioning his managing without, you know, the profanity or the sexism.
Alice Sweet.
Yeah. Poor Alice. She didn't deserve that. So that's where the Cincinnati Reds thing comes from. You say it like Earl Weaver said it. It's ridiculous.
Cincinnati Reds.
That's right. How about Earl Weaver being way ahead of his time when it comes to base running? Him being like, nope, we don't want guys getting thrown out. We want guys who hit home runs. Awkward transition. The Chicago Wolves will help me make it. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want complete flexibility with your ticket plan? The Chicago Wolves Flex Pack provides 10 undated vouchers at a discount. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. earlier on the show, I had Lovie Smith on. It was really a fun conversation that we had. And I talked with Lovie about him changing the way that we perceive defense, that his teams allowed us to see things differently when it came to the concept of takeaways.
It's kind of been a part of me most of my life. When we were in St. Louis, I know one year we had about 46 takeaways or something like that, but that has to be the mindset. And when I came to Chicago, I know Brian Urlacher was one of the guys that, really kind of stressed it. It was a lot of that was kind of in place by, by Greg Blanche and some of the guys, good coaches that they already had, Dick and different guys that they already had, but that's the only way you can look at it. When you're on the defensive side of the football, you can't just wait for the offense to turn the ball over. You have to be aggressive in your approach. And once guys get that mindset and they know that, yeah, there are interceptions that kind of come your way, but most of the time there will be a ball carrier and you have an opportunity to get the ball. And if you have that mindset and you get the guys to get in a position where they are attempting to take it out each play, it'll come out.
And we saw that even in practice where that first year, we're seeing guys pick up incomplete passes and stuff and run them back to the end zone. And we're going, why are they doing that? And then, looking back on it, it all kind of makes sense. Was that part of the training of getting those guys in that mindset of every time that the ball is out, there's an opportunity for us to make a play?
Well, I can see, Lawrence, you were really paying attention back in those days. That's definitely what we were trying to do. Again, the mindset. First off, on defense, just like on offense, it's the score. And you keep training your body for that. So every time the ball's on the ground, it's just another opportunity to recover a fumble. And when you get the ball, of course, you should think about getting the ball in the end zone. So, yeah, we tried to do that back then. And that's what the mindset hasn't changed any at all. Our guys, to a man, will defensively tell you that emphasis is still placed on it. And in time, guys really do buy into it. And that's when you start taking off.
So we talked a lot about the defense, and he talked about trying to instill that with the guys down in Champaign. But since I had him, I had to talk to him about Canton and the Hall of Fame and Brian Urlacher and possible Hall of Famers. Here's what Lovie had to say about Bob Babich inducting Brian Urlacher into the Hall.
A lot of, emotions that go through your head. I mean, two of my favorite people on the stage. Kind of start with that. And as a position coach, you really get close with, the guys you coach. Bob is an outstanding football coach in every way. Of course, he developed so many of those players. And at the time, I don't know if they knew it would end up in, it would end up in Canton. Had an idea of that. But and then it's just great for Brian to acknowledge it, like he does everybody that he's around. So special time for, of course, Chicago Bear football, but for Brian and, of course, for Bob, that's how it's supposed to end.
When I was asking you about the turnovers and you teaching, I'm sorry, takeaways. Well, I was teaching us about takeaways. I kept thinking a lot about Charles Tillman and his argument to be in the Hall of Fame. Like you changing our perspective on it, I feel like Charles change the way that we look at the cornerback position and take away specifically at that position, where it used to be, well, if a guy isn't a 8, 9, 10 interception guy, then he's not doing his job at the corner. But you have Charles knocking the ball out, ripping the ball out. And I wonder how that makes you feel that will lend a lot of credence to his Hall of Fame credentials.
Well, Lawrence, I think when you're looking at whether a person goes into the Hall of Fame or not, you have to look at what have they brought to our game. Have they brought something unique, a unique talent to the game? And have they done it as well as anyone that's played the game? I think, right, when you talk about, okay, you say, guys, you think about taking the ball away. Who are some of the all-time greats that take the ball away? Almost to a man, Charles Tillman's name is going to come up in the conversation. No one bought into taking it away the way he did. And every time when he was around the ball, that was his mindset, getting the ball back. So when you're the best at something that changes football games, you should be recognized that way. Again, Charles Tillman did something that no one, as well as anybody that's played the game. So you have to, he has to come into the conversation for that reason. I'm going to say the same thing about Devin Hester. When you're the best, there's a punt returner in the game of football. And when you're the best to ever play the game at that position, naturally you should be in the Hall of Fame. So there's a few guys, of course, from that team we can push. That's for another conversation, but both of them should be in it.
I thought that was great. Great arguments for both Charles Tillman and Devin Hester. When I was at the Hall of Fame, there's a display, like Devin Hester's jersey, the one of the balls from the Super Bowl where he returns the kickoff at the start of the Super Bowl is there, and his accomplishments are already there. I tend to agree with Lovey on this. If you're talking about celebrating the best that have ever done it, how can you then have this museum of great players? Because the punt is going away. Like, that's kickoff return is almost gone. Now, all this stuff is, no one's going to get close to Devin Hester when it comes to returns for touchdown. They're not going to get close to where he is. It might as well be Ted Williams hitting 400. You're not going to get close. And if you're talking about the greatest that ever did it, you have a museum of great football players. Who's the greatest returner ever? Devin Hester. He should be. I mean, it's a wonderful argument. It's a logical argument. And when Charles comes up in a couple of years, it's going to be real interesting to see what they do. He's not going to get in on the first try. It'll be real interesting to see what the arguments are for him. I know what the arguments against him are. These two Pro Bowls or whatever. But when you look at the way he changed the game, think of all the players that have now been influenced. Not the guys weren't trying to take the ball away, but the manner in which they were taking it away. He incorporated that into the NFL. Any of these kids right now, you bring up the concept of peanut punch. I think that's a big deal. Great conversation with Lovey. It'll be on the podcast if you want to check out the entire interview. And we talked a lot about the Illini as well, the $20 million that they got to help with their facilities and whatnot. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Julie DeCaro's already in the studio. It's almost like she's hosting a show coming up at 10 o'clock. Selfish. Back after this on The Score.
I've always loved Lawrence.
Julie DeCaro is here ready to rock the mic. Is that the peasant shirt? What do you call that?
I have like five of these. Yeah, it's the Romanian peasant shirt.
I dig. It's comfortable. It looks really comfortable.
You know what, though? It has a weird smell coming off it. Like, do you ever leave your laundry, like, in the basket too long before you put it in the dryer, and then it has that weird smell?
Mildewy?
Yeah.
You got to wash it again.
I know. But that's, I'm stuck in it now for the rest of the night.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it won't be my problem, but.
Also, I spilled corn nuts on it, so it's got that smell, too, which is better than the mildew smell.
Corn nuts, is that, like, your thing?
Yes.
Really?
Love corn nuts. Oh. They follow me on Twitter now, you know.
No way!
Oh, yeah. That was the greatest moment of my life.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cup follows me on Twitter. And they sent me a box, man.
See, yeah. Corn nuts hasn't sent me anything.
It was so great. It was like Christmas. Wow. I was like, what? Like, I tweeted, like, one thing. And they're like, we would like to send you a box. I was like, for real?
Oh, I asked corn nuts how many retweets to get a free bag of ranch. And they didn't even respond.
That's weak, corn nuts. Step it up.
It's terrible.
So, like, let's talk game snacking now. Now that we're here, let's talk about this. So you're gonna sit down for Bears Packers if you don't have to work or anything like that. What's on the dream snack table for Julie DeCaro?
Well, it's a night game, so can it be dinner?
Sure, absolutely.
So it's Lou Malnati's sausage.
So you, yes, that is significant.
Yes,
that's it.
Well, I mean, if I'm eating that as pretty, that's a lot, Lawrence. Yeah, I mean,
I know, but you know how it is. Like sometimes you're like, oh, you eat something early on and you're like, yeah, I could use a little taste.
I don't
something.
Know. Like I do like spinach dip and pitas a lot. Like, you know, I don't know.
Eli, what's your go-to snack when you're watching games?
I'm going to counter Lumalnati's with Giordano's.
How did we get from snacks to pizza?
Pizza can
big.
Be a snack at times.
I mean, but you know, I thought maybe we were talking corn nuts and Reese's. I thought maybe we'd go a little bit smaller. You guys went like right to the penthouse.
Well, it's going to be on at Kit dinner Kats. Time.
Give me the Kit Kats.
That's true. Now, are you one of these people that buck the trend and just bite into the Kit Kat, or do you split them apart?
Got to go traditional. Split it up.
Doesn't Tanny do that? Where Tanny like just rips into a Kit Kat? With no regard
what,
for
what, he doesn't break the bars?
Yeah.
Oh, that's messed up. You know what I do with Twix? I eat everything off the cookie. Take the top off, eat all the sides all the way around.
You don't want the cookie?
No, I do want the cookie.
Oh.
So I scrape everything off with my teeth and eat it, and then I save the cookie for last.
I was watching Hard Knocks, like catching up on Hard Knocks, and I forget which player it is, but his wife makes these cookies for everybody. And I was just sitting there going, I want them cookies. Like I understood when he's like, yeah, the players ask me all the time for my wife to make cookies. I was like, yeah, I want those. They were just chocolate chip cookies, but they looked amazing. Like, I'm not sure if she had like added in like Oreos in there or whatever, but they looked amazing.
It's
a little too much?
It's too much. You know what? Next time that we are together, I'm going to bring in my rum chata cupcakes.
Say what now?
Yeah. Actually, Ben Finfer ate like six one time to see if you could get buzzed off cupcakes. And like a little bit, you can.
It doesn't take much for a Finfer.
I think it was because of the frosting. But I'm going to make them again.
Really?
I've only made them once before. But they were a huge hit.
I would be down for being the guinea pig on that.
Yeah, I'll bring them in.
I feel like I didn't know that, you know, because, you know, Maggie is kind of the designated baker here at the station. I didn't know you had skills like that.
I cook more than bake. I hate baking.
So basically, if I want to get a perfect meal, it's you and her. Because you've got the dinner and she's got the dessert.
That sounds right.
Huh.
Because cooking is art. Baking is like
science.
Math and science.
Yeah.
And I don't have time for that.
Is there anyone here who's like a sommelier? Anyone?
Bernstein will say him, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dan would probably be our guy that probably knows wine. Like, I'm trying to put this whole thing together. So we got you cooking dinner, Maggie with dessert, Dan with the wine recommendation. Eli, do you make a mean salad?
I could do fish.
Okay, that's enough from you.
Why is that bad?
That's not an appetizer.
Because we're putting a meal together. Why and you're can't? Like, I'm going to do fish. Julie's got dinner. We got that covered.
Well, then I got no other appetizers.
Kit Kats.
Buck the tread with the dessert for appetizers.
Why not? Why not? There is a chocolate fudge cake that you find at a lot of like Greek restaurants in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pizza place. I can't remember. I don't want to screw this up. But there's a pizza place over by DePaul's Loop campus that has it. And it's just so it's so decadent. Like, it's one of those things where the fudge is like it's smooth, like on the cake. And you're like, this is so good.
I ate French silk last night.
Really?
But I hate pie. So
yeah, you're team cake.
Yeah.
We're team cake.
I ate the middle out of my piece. And I just left the crust.
Jules,
it was cold and it's not fruit.
We're team cake.
I know, but I couldn't get cake. I had to take what I had.
That's a fair point. Sometimes
it's either chocolate or no chocolate.
Sometimes you just gotta go with what's there.
You can't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes,
you just might find.
You get what you need. What's going to be on the show tonight?
Nancy Armour's coming up at 10:20. She's been doing some great reporting on what's happening at Ohio State. And if you missed it, Zach Smith had a complete and total meltdown on Twitter today, so we're going to talk about that. Tony Andracki is going to come by at 11 o'clock to talk about the hottest team in baseball, the Chicago Cubs.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Julie, I'm looking forward to that on the ride home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Julie DeCaro's show is coming up between now and midnight. Show her the same love that you showed me. Thanks to Herb Lawrence. Thanks to Eli Herskovich. Hersh on Hoops. It's a great basketball podcast. I'm telling you, you better get on it. That boy got advertising on his podcast, too. Cha-ching! Yeah, Eli! That's right! Monetize it! That's the way it works. Thanks to Lovie Smith for being on the show. That full interview will be up on the podcast. And thanks to University of Illinois for saying, hey, why don't you guys chat? Turned out really well. I'm gone. Cubs are out east over the next couple days, so unless there's a big old rain delay, you won't hear from me until Monday. But, hey, I'm going to be out in the lots tomorrow at Soldier Field with NBC Sports Chicago. So, and I think that they're going to, they're not saying that they're going to have me do beer money, but I feel like I'm going to do like a, it's not going to be beer, but it's going to be like a kind of beer money type deal-ish.
Now I feel like I have to show up.
Come on through. I'll put you on TV. You know that. That'd be fun. So I'll be out in the lots with NBC Sports Chicago tomorrow at the Bears game. Y'all ain't even going into that game, so just come hang out with me in the parking lot. I'll talk to you then. Later.
That's about it from Manager's Corner. Go off and it's your show coming up next on the Baltimore Oriole Baseball Network.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Pizza.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.